Perfect. Now I have your number. Thanks.
Hey, I'm Robbie Kramer. You're listening to the Leverage Podcast, where we discuss using your social skills to hack dating, travel, finding your dream job, and becoming a complete man.
Hey guys, welcome back to the show. And as you're probably busy, I'm busy too. Everyone's busy, right? Busy is killing us, and it's kind of the new normal. You know, when someone asks us what we're doing, we tell them, yeah, we're good, but we're busy. And, you know, we all want to achieve our dreams and a life that matters. So we create these busy lives that make us feel important. But instead, we often feel stressed out, exhausted, overwhelmed. We have too much to do and not enough time. But it doesn't have to be this way. Our guest today is Garland Vance. He's an author, speaker, and leadership consultant. And Dr. Vance co-founded Advanced Leadership to help overwhelmed influencers and organizations live with purpose, productivity, and peace. And he's also the author of Getting Unbusy, which Forbes named as one of the 7 books everyone on your team should read. So Garland, thanks for coming on the show. I'm glad you weren't too busy for us.
Well, busy's a bad word in my world, so not too busy. Super excited to be here, Robbie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So tell us, how'd you, you know, become an expert on this stuff? Give us your story.
Yeah. So in 2013, I went to my doctor with all of these physical challenges that I had never had before. I was having chronic migraine headaches, like 2 to 3 migraine headaches a week that would just knock me out for the remainder of the day. I was having extreme fatigue. I would go to bed exhausted, wake up exhausted, forgetfulness, and just all of these physical challenges were happening. And so I go to my doctor and I said, "Hey, Dr. Tate, what in the world is going on?" And he said, "Garland, tell me about your life." And I said, "Well, it's a good life. It's just really busy." And he had the insight to say, "Well, tell me what you mean by busy." And I said, "Well, I work 50 to 60 hours a week leading this nonprofit that that I love." And I said, "I'm married. I've been married. We have 3 kids. Those kids are young. I'm working on my doctorate in leadership. And so that takes 10 to 20 hours a week. I travel about 60 days a year between work and school. Our family's super involved in the community. We're helping our church start up leadership programs. And oh, by the way, my mom passed away a year ago. So we've really scaled back our commitments in the last year just so we could have some space to grieve." And my doctor looked at me and he goes, "Garland, I know what this is." And I was like, "A brain tumor, you know, heart disease. What's he going to tell me?" Right. And he says, "This is stress." And I hated that answer. I got so mad at him because I was like, I don't feel stressed out. And he said, "Well, your head does 2 to 3 times a week when you're having these migraine headaches." And, right. And I said, "Doc, why in the world would I be stressed out?" And he said, "Because you're so busy." And so here I am, I'm working on this doctorate in leadership. Everybody I know, leaders included, are telling me how busy they are. And so I just decided to start researching it almost like a little pet project of, you know, I just want to see if busyness really is hurting me, if it really is hurting other people. And I just became consumed by this to the point where I did my entire doctoral thesis and dissertation and all that stuff around busyness in leaders and organizations and what it's doing to us.
Well, that's those migraine headaches, man. I think I've had 1 or 2 in my life, and
they're miserable.
Oh my God, I can't imagine much worse. You know?
Yeah.
And it's funny, the one I remember, I think it was just one time that was brought on by stress. It's actually when like a girlfriend cheated on me and it was crazy. Like I was on a flight and I got this crazy, I was totally stressed out about what was going to happen. And, so, I mean, I can relate to 1, but 2 or 3 a week. I mean, that's torture.
Yeah. It was brutal.
So, why did you decide to write the book?
Yeah. So I get finished with my dissertation, get it all approved. And as I kept talking to people, I would, you know, I was coaching with clients. I was speaking at some organizations, and everywhere I would go, people were just saying, like, we need this message out there. Because the challenge is everybody assumes that busyness is good, right? We wouldn't brag about it if we weren't, you right. know? And so we're all talking about
there's
busyness.
There's a total I'm so busy, you know? Like everyone loves to say that. I'm so busy with work. It's brutal. And it's annoying when people say that because you're like, yeah, cool story. We're all busy. Congratulations.
Right. And we do. We brag about it and nobody else brags about any, you know, most people don't brag about addictions that they have. You're not like, hey, I'm strung out on crack 5 nights a week, you know, or something like that. Nobody else is bragging about those addictions. And so I was talking to people and I was teaching about it. And what I was realizing is that because everybody assumes that busyness is a good thing, you've almost got to undo these beliefs. And so I was like, I've got to get this out there where people can understand it, you know, where it's not just me going and speaking and, you know, maybe there's 1,000 people there, maybe there's 20 people there. I've really got to get it in a format where it's mass market and people can get their hands on it.
Mm-hmm. Got it. So you have an interesting question, which is, what is busyness? And I think I know what it is, but I have a feeling you might have a different sort of answer. So,
So I define busyness as an overcommitment to too many good commitments. So all of us have busyness because we have so many good things in our life, right? Like, so for my story, work was good. My family was good. My doctoral work was good. Everything that I was doing was really good. But when you put them all together, it becomes bad. So it reminds me, and I tell this story in the book, it reminds me of my son, my oldest son. At the time, he was about 10 years old, and we went to eat at a sushi restaurant, and my family loves sushi, and sushi is a good thing, right? If you like sushi, you know, it is really, really good. But he ordered this sushi roll that was two rolls in one. And it, normally he would split it with his sister, but she wasn't there that day. And so my son decided to take on the challenge of eating the entire sushi roll by himself. It was 3 years before we could say the word sushi without him turning green. I mean, he would just get so sick at his stomach every time he said sushi. Well, sushi's a really good thing, but when you eat too much of it, it becomes a bad thing. And that's exactly what busyness is all these good commitments that we put together, and it's literally killing us.
Yeah, I mean, I've got the problem of I'm a yes man. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I say yes to most things, and I feel like that has opened many doors for me. Have you ever seen that movie? I think it's Yes Man.
Yes Man. I just saw it recently.
And it's a powerful sort of message in there. Cause if you don't have much going on in your life and you're not busy, you want to be busy, cause I guess boredom is kind of the opposite. And for me anyways, like, I hate being bored. You know, I think when I was a little kid, my parents used to put me in timeout, which was forced boredom. And ever since then, I was like, I am going to do whatever I can to never be bored, which led to the opposite, of course, of being ridiculously busy because you just say yes to everything. Yeah. So saying no to things is really a challenge for me. But it sounds like that is kind of the first step, or at least a huge important block of getting unbusy. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So what we tend to do is we default to yes, and then we defend our no. So what do I mean by that? Whenever somebody asks us to do something, whether it's at work, whether it's, you know, a friend of ours asking us to hang out, we tend to default to yes. We just immediately say yes, and we don't even think about it. And then if we can't do it, we begin to defend our no. And so we give reasons or excuses why we can't. So, I'm so sorry, I've got a commitment at that time, or, you know, I'm just really busy right now, I'm not able to do it, right? We'll even use that as an excuse. So we give these excuses to defend our no. And as soon as we do that, it opens up the door for the person we're saying no to kind of attack those no's and be like, oh, well, you can't do it at this time, let's do it at another time, right? So we kind of rearrange things. What I encourage people to do is to flip those and to begin defaulting to no and defending your yes. So defaulting to no means that when somebody asks you to do something, even if you don't say it out loud, your mental default is, I'm not going to do that. I've already got enough on my plate. I don't need to add something else to it. So even if you don't say it out loud, you're thinking that initially, and then you're defending your yes. So what does a well-defended yes look like? Well, first, it's slow. You don't have to say yes immediately. If you're going to say yes, you can say to somebody, can I have 24 to 48 hours to think about this? And if you really want to like add a ninja trick to it, you say, can I have 24 to 48 hours? It's probably going to be a no, but I just want to make sure, right? So you're already setting them up to expect that it's going to be a no. So a well-defended yes is slow. Second, a well-defended yes is careful. Like you're actually thinking about the ripple effect of saying yes to someone. So the other day I had a friend of mine who texted me and he was like, hey, I'm going to a baseball game on Wednesday. Do you want to go with me? Gates open at 6, game starts at 7, right? Now, this friend, he's a really, really good friend. But before I said yes, I needed to think through, okay, what does this mean for the ripple effect of travel time there? It's travel there. What does it mean, the ripple effect as far as, you know, my family and the kids and what they have going on? Or are we going to miss out on any other opportunities that we've already said yes to? So I'm just kind of thinking through, is this okay? Because it's not, you know, a 1 or 2 hour commitment. That's a whole evening. And so you think through carefully what's the ripple effect. And then the third criteria of a well-defended yes is you subtract before you add. So you don't say yes and then just add more and more and more and more. You really think about, do I need to take something out of my life in order to make room for something? So you subtract before you add. That's really a key way. And one of the best practices for learning to get unbusy is to switch and default to no and defend your yes.
I like that because it's true. We all, or I'm sure a lot of us, just kind of default to yes. And then we end up canceling or, you know, defending our no's.
Yeah. Or even worse, we say yes to things. And then like 2 months in, or maybe 2 minutes in, we're like, why did I say yes to that? I don't really even want to be a part of that. But mm-hmm. We've committed ourselves now.
Right. And it's so much worse to break the commitment. For me, when I say no to something, I feel bad. Like it's, I have this, I think too much guilt because there's no, you know, someone asked me just yesterday, I think a buddy said, hey, you and your girlfriend, they want to come to karaoke Friday night. And she didn't want to go. And I was not really caring or wanting to go. but I felt bad saying no. You know, like I was like, oh, he's going to be so upset if we don't go. I mean, yeah. How can we do that to him? But
well, and so here's the good news is that's not unusual, but mm-hmm. the good news is no is a muscle, right? So just like if you're working out your biceps or your triceps, when you first start doing it, you're going to walk away from a workout and you're going to be so sore the next day, right? And you're going to be so aware of the fact that you've worked out your biceps, but you keep doing it over and over and over again. And that muscle is going to get stronger and the soreness isn't going to be there quite to the same degree. I think it's the same way with no, is the more we get comfortable saying it, the easier it gets to say and the less we struggle with it, because every time we say yes, we're saying no to every other opportunity that we could have. So it really begins to help you. And here's the beauty of it, Robbie, is what I found is people will often say, they'll ask me to do something now, but they'll say, I know it's probably going to be a no, but, and so like they're already, you know, kind of laying the foundation. They're preconditioned that Garland's probably going to say no, but I'm going to ask him anyway. And it's not going to hurt my feelings if he does say no.
And it makes you more valuable because you usually say no. And when you do say yes, they're probably way more excited, which is what I
absolutely.
I tell my clients for dating that all the time. It's like, if you're too available, then everyone's going to think, you know, there's no value in having you there. It's not going to seem like a valuable invitation if your time is completely, you know, just given out willy nilly. So,
yep, absolutely.
So after you kind of you know, had this diagnosis from your doctor and realized that you were just too busy and the stress was, you know, causing you all of this, you know, physical pain and mental problems, all that stuff. Not mental problems, but the migraine.
No, there's actually a ton of research around what busyness does to our minds, and it creates a lot of problems. So that's an accurate statement.
Okay, good. So how did you start the process of getting unbusy? Because, you know, you've got kids, you have a family, you have your career. It's so difficult to like remove things, you know?
Yeah. Well, what is that process like? One of the reasons I wrote the book is also because I wanted to be able to say to people, it took me about 5 years to figure it out, but I can teach you to do it in 30 days. And so for me, it was a lot of experimentation. First, I had to read a ton about, is busyness really all that bad? And came across so much research on what it's doing to us physically, mentally, emotionally, relationally, what it does to our productivity, what it does to entire companies and organizations. So once I was convinced, okay, busyness really is doing a lot of damage to us and we're all bragging about it, then it became, I almost had to make myself a human experiment and go, okay, what do I need to do? And so I just started trying things out. And as I was trying them out, I would reflect on those. I would talk to other people about those. And what emerged, and unfortunately for me, it took about 4 to 5 years. But what happened is this really simplified process came out of, first you need to deconstruct, right? You need to deconstruct.
Before you go into the process, I wanted to ask you, because you mentioned some things that are like, can you tell us more about what it's actually doing to us? Because
yeah, absolutely.
I you know, for beyond what you said, I'm curious.
Yeah. Well, I tell you specifically for your audience, let's talk about what it does to us physically and what it does to our relationships. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I think those are two really important ones. So physically, whenever we encounter stress of any kind, adrenaline and cortisol get released. That's from the sympathetic nervous system. Okay. So adrenaline is there. That's the fight or flight. And cortisol is there. And what cortisol does is it prevents us from, it has a couple of effects. One is it prevents us from thinking long-term. And so the second is it causes all of our energy to divert from the unnecessary systems in our body to the necessary systems. Now, this makes a lot of sense if the stress is really, really real. So a few months ago, I was walking through the woods of North Carolina with my wife, and we ran across a black bear. Very stressful situation, right? This thing could attack us, kill us, hurt us, maim us. And so adrenaline and cortisol get released, and those things give you the energy that you need to deal with the stress. But about 3 or 4 hours later, your parasympathetic nervous system kicks in, and it washes all of that adrenaline and cortisol out of your body so that you can recover and then be ready for the next stress. Now, what does this little physiological and biological explanation have to do with anything? That's how our bodies are designed to respond to stress. Well, busyness, as this overcommitment to too many good commitments, is constantly creating little bursts of stress, which release adrenaline and cortisol. But because we're busy, our bodies never have the time to recover, to go into that parasympathetic nervous system. So what's happening is we're constantly releasing more adrenaline, more cortisol. And there's been 26 or more different diseases or physical problems that have been connected to overexposure to adrenaline and cortisol. So chronic fatigue, headaches, like I was having, muscle tension. It has everything from early onset heart disease, colitis, diverticulitis, all of these challenges that are coming physically. Not to mention, cortisol is one of the biggest causes of belly fat. If you're in the dating scene, nobody wants, you know, you don't want that right. Enhanced, right? So you have this this physical problem. You don't have the energy that you need. Your body's basically breaking down on itself. So that's the physical problem. But then there's the relational problem.
That constant process of having these chemicals released into your body, and then you don't have time to deal with them, or you don't have time to get back to equilibrium, I guess, because you're so busy, as you said, it's right. Just on the next one, on the next one. And that feels good to people, I think. I used to work at a startup private equity firm, and our boss, he said, you got to come in at 9 and you leave at never. And just, you know, giving us so much work that we were so busy, and it just felt like it was never boring, but it was just so much like stress, because every time it's like, here, and there's this fire and this fire, you're just constantly putting out fires. And it's just this roller coaster. And I gained a bunch of weight over the 3 years I worked there. I put on like 35 pounds, I think. And wow, it was not a happy time in my life. So,
yeah. And I mean, it just does so much damage to us physically. Weight gain, like you're pointing out, weight gain, so many problems. And then there's the relational one. And I think this is really important in the dating world is, one of the things that's connected to busyness is what's known as depersonalization. So depersonalization is when we begin to dislike the people that we should care about the most. And so depersonalization begins to happen when we're so busy that when a person comes to us, ask us for help, want something from us, we resent them for their neediness. And so I'll tell you, nothing will kill a dating relationship faster than depersonalization, right? Like if you begin to resent the person that you care about the most or the person who you're trying to win over, then that's going to backfire on you really, really quickly. So that's just a couple of the effects of busyness.
Right. Yeah. I've definitely been guilty of that before where, you know, you always kind of neglect the people that are closest to you. So whether that's your girlfriend or your mom or your sister or dad or whatever, you know, you know, they're going to forgive you when you're busy. So you just brush them off. You say, hey, I'm busy. And then,
yeah, we did it when my kids were young and I was at my busiest, I hadn't been diagnosed yet. We did this retreat where we went away and we wanted to identify what our family life family purpose statement was. Okay. And so one of the exercises that we did with our kids at that time was we said, what are the phrases and the sayings that we use all the time in our family? And one of my kids got really excited and they were like, I know. I said, what? She goes, it's go, go, go. Like anytime we're trying to get out the door, go, go, go. And you say it mean. And she was like, you say it mean and you're aggressive with it. I was like, oh, that is, you know, and that's depersonalization is I don't care about you as a human being. We've got somewhere to go. Get out the door and get in your car seat or wherever it is you're going. And it's totally dehumanizing.
Yeah. that's cool that you guys did that retreat, hopefully.
Yes, we learned a lot that retreat. It was really good.
Yeah. The go, go, go is something I say a lot to my clients, but usually in a different sort of context. Like okay. They see a girl they want to approach, go, go, go. So
nice. That
one, that's better than I think you guys got rid of it or stopped.
Right. Yours is much better than mine. Yeah.
So you were telling before about, you know, the kind of the steps that you took to get unbusy, right? Is that you're starting before I interrupted and asked to go back.
Yeah. So what I discovered, and again, it took me a long time, but I can take people through it a lot faster, is there's really five simple steps that you have to do. So the first is you have to decide that busyness isn't worth it, right? So look at the research and you make a decision. I'm not going to be busy anymore. The second step is you begin to deconstruct. You deconstruct some bad habits. So we talked about one of those already, saying yes too quickly and too often. You begin to deconstruct some inhibiting beliefs that really keep you trapped in busyness. So we found three major beliefs that people have that keep them trapped in busyness. I need to be more, I need to do more, I need to get more. Those are the things that really keep people trapped in busyness. So you begin to deconstruct some of the commitments and the habits and the beliefs that you have. The third is you begin to design the life that you want to live. And so you begin to say, what's the pace of life that I want to live? You know, do I want to be busy from 9 a.m. until never? Or is there a different kind of pace that I want? Do I want my mornings to be slower or my evenings to be spent on family? You design the pace that you want. And then you begin to design the dreams and ambitions that you have, these really big goals. So what most people do is they aren't clear on what they want to achieve, what they want to accomplish. And as a result of that, they say yes to everything, hoping that somewhere in the middle of that, their dreams and priorities will emerge. And it just doesn't happen, right? We design our lives and then we begin to live that way. So you design the dreams and the priorities you want. Step four is you begin to develop that lifestyle. So what's the calendar that I need to have in order to achieve the goals that I want? What are the mindset that I need to have? How do I capture things as they're coming into my mind? And then finally, the fifth step is you draw others in. You draw in your family, your friends, and your coworkers as well. And so it becomes about a community of people who are committing to live an unbusy lifestyle together.
Got it. Okay. And what if you're, what if you're not busy? Do you have, cause that's something I actually find with, so a lot of the people that listen to this podcast have a really busy work schedule, but then when it comes to their dating life, they either don't have enough dates or they're kind of busy in one area of life, but not really busy in another area of life. And right. then they, I don't know, I think their time management gets kind of jumbled up. Do you have any, I know yours is about getting unbusy, but if you're not busy at all, is there anything you right. can say about that?
Yeah, well, what I would say is a lot of times what happens, if I'm understanding what you're saying correctly, is we have this really busy area of our lives, right? Work right. begins to take over everything. And because of that, all the other areas of life get crowded out. Our relationships, our hobbies, and our social friendships, all these other things begin to get crowded out. What I would recommend people to do is to build what I call an end of work boundary. So for most of us, when we're working, the mentality is I'm going to work until A, I get the job done, or B, I fall over exhausted, right? And the problem in knowledge work is the job is never done. You're going to die with an unfinished to-do list. My dad just retired and he still has this unfinished to-do list from work, but he's retiring. So an end of day or an end of work boundary, what it does is it's where you say at this time every day, I'm finished. Work is finished, right? So for me, it's actually 4:30 in the afternoon. For some people, it might be 5:30, 6 o'clock, but you pick that time, you put it in your calendar. This is when work is finished for me. So what that does, it has two effects. One is it gives you the ability to communicate to all the people around you, I'm done at this time, right? So that opens up room for those other areas of life. But there's something else that happens when you do that that's kind of magic, and that is based on something called Parkinson's Law, which says work expands to fill the time allotted. What happens is you'll actually be able to get more done or as much done in that time as you were before. So when I was going through getting unbusy, I went from working 60 hours to working 42 hours a week in a couple of months without losing any productivity. I was still getting the same amount done, but I had way more energy for all those other areas of life. So that's what I would really encourage somebody to do if their, you know, their work is overflowing, build an end of work boundary and turn it off.
So you pick a time basically, and anything after that, you just push it till the next day.
Yep. Push it till the next day, push it until, or a few days from then, or even evaluate, is this really even important for me to do? Because I think a lot of times we do, again, busy work.
Right.
So you push it until the next day.
So I have a interesting sort of situation because my job, my main job obviously is as a coach and a content creator, if you will. You know, I don't work specific hours. I have clients kind of all the time through my ongoing coaching program. And they're from all over the world. So they're going to message at all points of the day in our group. So I'm kind of like always on call for a question. It's not a big deal if I don't answer it immediately because I have other moderators and other people who are, you know, very qualified to answer. But there is sort of this idea that I'm never not at work. And that's my like main career. And then I also have a real estate sort of investment side business where I run vacation rental properties using Airbnb. Okay. And that's a great sort of, you know, side income. And it's very hands-off, except for the occasional sort of Airbnb message that you get that's very urgent, like
right,
you know, the toilet's overflowing and it's flooding the house, or something of that nature. So between those two things, you know, most of the time I have all the time, you know, kind of free. I don't have any sort of schedule per se, unless I have clients in town that are there for a specific event. But I find myself kind of always working a little bit, if that makes sense.
Sure.
So I'm curious if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah. So what I would recommend for you in this kind of situation, and for those who are listening in, is because you cannot predict the times that people will contact you or the times that you're going to need to be on, the only thing that you can really do is pick the times that you're going to be off. Okay. And so whether that's setting up autoresponders during a certain time, but again, so let's say maybe it's for you 6 p.m. until 11 p.m., you know, and maybe that's too long. Maybe it's 6 until 8 p.m. and then you've got some other times throughout the day. But I would really recommend that you select times where you say I'm off. And then if you have autoresponders on or something along those lines, and it says, you know, for you, because I value the relationships that I have, that's important for your brand, because right, I value the relationships that I have and I'm committed to maintaining those while I help you build yours, I will not be able to respond to you until this time at night. So that way mentally you can disengage and your clients know that you're focused on the very thing that you're helping them do.
Right. Yeah, that's great advice.
Yeah, and you might not be able to do it with Airbnb, but I think you also know, like, there are emergencies in life.
Well, I have an assistant.
Okay.
Right. I have an assistant who helps me with those things. So I think it would be more about kind of creating, goes back to communication and creating, you know, a boundary with her, which is like, during this time, this is your problem. And you tell me what time you need, and then it'll be my problem. Sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it sounds like
you can even work out with your, you could even work out with your assistant this, a communication boundary, which says, if this is an emergency that you can't handle during this time, send me a message, but it has to say emergency at the top. Right. And that way, you know, hey, if I see that word, then I got to pay attention.
Right. Yeah. That's great. It seems like there's, you know, a lot of power in outsourcing, of course, but I've found a lot of time outsourcing or getting, you know, other people involved to help you to get unbusy can make you more busy. Because now, instead of doing that work yourself, you're communicating what needs to be done. But that's not something I'm very good at. I'm horrible at delegating work. I don't know. It's just really not one of my strong suits. So I end up feeling like, well, it's going to take me more time to delegate this. I should just do it myself, sort of thing. I don't know if you ever ran into any sort of problems like that for yourself or anyone else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I totally get that. And I think a lot of high achievers really struggle with that. And it's almost like shifting your mindset. You know, when you start investing money in things, you have this shift of mindset where you're like, I'm not giving up money. I'm delaying the use of money until a later time. And in the same way with delegation, and I still have to go through it pretty regularly of like reminding myself, yes, I could do this myself quickly, but if I do it 1,000 times very quickly, that's different than if I do it one time or two times very slowly with somebody I'm giving this to. Like, there's just an ROI there,
right,
that is so much more. So I have to like mentally remind myself of that almost every time I'm delegating, like, okay, this is actually good for me to do this because it's going to free up time in the long run.
Got it. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. I like that ROI analogy and you know, the return on investment, of course, because you just have to come to terms with the fact that you're going to do it slowly when you're training someone, and then you don't have to do it anymore. So,
yep. And then they're probably going to have questions. It's going to feel real bulky and slow, but at the end of, you know, whatever that is, whether it takes them a week to learn it, a month to learn it, at the end of that time, the ROI is great.
Right. So what are the best practices of, you know, highly productive people who aren't super busy, unbusy,
yeah.
as
yeah.
you say?
Yeah. So what the research showed is that there's four best practices of highly productive, unbusy people. And they all start with R. Okay. It's relationships, recreation, rest, and reflection. So what we discovered is that for most people, when they think of relationships, recreation, rest, reflection, they try to cram those into their calendar somewhere. They're like, oh, I'll see, you know. And so these are the people who say, I'd love to get coffee with you. It's just going to be 6 to 8 weeks, right? You know, this, like, they're just trying to cram things into their calendar. But highly productive, unbusy people make time first for those four things. So relationships. There's two types of relationships that are really important. It's your most important people, right? Your fiance, your family, things like that. But then there's also your most energizing people. These are the people who you're around, and whenever you're around them, like, you just feel more alive as a result of it. So making time for those relationships first and build everything else around it. Second is recreation, things that you love to do. So I don't know if you can see behind me, but I'm a hat collector. And so I love collecting hats with what I think are cool logos or unique colors. So for me, one of my recreational activities, things I love to do for the sheer enjoyment of doing it, is just looking at hats and researching them and finding them and creating lists of them. And which one am I going to get next? That's a recreational activity for me. So you build that recreational activity into your calendar first. Third is rest, whether that's sleep, whether that's reading or mental disengagement, like, you make time for that first. And then finally is reflection. So reflection is all about looking back in order to do better in the future, right? So it's kind of like reviewing the game film. If you're playing, you know, football or basketball or soccer or whatever it is, like, you review the game film. So you build time to look back in order to make the future better.
Got it. Yeah, those are obviously super important, and I like the way you categorize them. So you also said that there's an exercise that you can get 10 hours of time back a week.
Yes.
I'm very curious to hear what that is, because that sounds amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. So actually, you and your listeners can get this for free. Go to killbusy.com/5, the number 545. And hopefully you can put a link in show notes.
Yeah, I'll put a link.
Okay. So, but it's free, free exercise. So here's what it is you go through it's called the commit to uncommit challenge. Okay. So, you go through and you list out the all of the commitments that you have, right? And it's, you know, for you, it might be every client that you're working with, marketing that you're doing, you know, houses that you're managing. For others, it might be every meeting that they have, all their, you know, the outside activities that they're doing. You know, you literally go through, you list every activity that you're a part of, or every commitment. And then right beside that, you put in how much time that takes on a weekly basis or a monthly basis. So you can really see, you know, how much time am I spending on all of these activities? So then next to that, you give one of three faces for each of those activities. You give a happy face, right? Where you go, yeah, I love this. This adds energy to me. You put a sad face. I don't love this. This sucks the life out of me, drives me crazy. Or you put like a straight mouth face, you know, a meh kind of face. And it's like, I don't feel good or bad about this whatsoever. And from there, what you're really trying to do is say, how can I get out of these meh and these sad type of commitments that I have? Can I delegate those to somebody, like we were talking about a second ago? Can I trade services with somebody where I take something that's really energizing for me, but they take something off my plate that's energizing for them, but I hate doing so. So can I trade this? Can I get rid of it in some way? You know, if you're a part of a book club that you just hate being a part of, like, just get rid of it. Or do I just have to accept that this is what I want? And what we found is that when you begin to go through and you score each of those, right? This is happy, sad, meh kind of thing. And you think about what you can do to get out of that commitment. You free up between 5 and 10 hours every week for at least the next year. So you're talking about, you know, if you get 10 hours freed up, you're talking 520 hours over the course of the next year for an exercise that'll take you about an hour to do.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think everyone, I'm going to do it, and everyone listening, I hope, does it too, because it's a no-brainer for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what are some of the benefits of getting unbusy? I mean, there's the obvious ones, of course, but I'd love to hear from you exactly what those are.
Yeah. So I think there are a ton. The biggest one that I have found is you take back control of your life, right? So what busyness is it's an attempt to get more out of life by cramming more into life, right? Mm-hmm. But the more that we cram in, the less we get to slow down, the less we get to stop and smell the roses, as the saying goes. So the biggest benefit that I've found is that the quality of life that you have is increased exponentially. One, you're spending more time on the things that really matter to you, and you're spending more time with the people who really matter to you. But the other thing that does is it opens up opportunities for you to go after some really big dreams and goals that you have that normally feel like you just don't have enough time to do those. So, I mean, that's what's been crazy for me is, you know, in the course of a few years, writing a book and starting to run half marathons and I take one day a week to go on a date with my wife, not like a date night, a date day, a full date day, starting our own business, but only working 4 days a week for it. I mean, all of these things that I think a lot of times people would say, man, I'd love to do one of those things over the course of a decade. And we've been able to do all of those things in the course of a few years, but it's because we got unbusy. And so the quality of life, the quality of relationships, and the ability to really make significant progress on those big dreams and high priorities that you have, that happens so much faster because you've got that time in your life to do it.
Yeah, because otherwise that stuff is always pushed back until later because you got to deal with stuff that you're busy with.
And, right.
Yeah, you never end up doing the things you really want to do because you're just kind of in putting out fire mode.
Yep. Yep.
Is there anything else that, you know, I feel like I should ask you, but I haven't yet? or that I don't know that I should ask you?
No. Well, here's one thing I'll say. I always like to say that when we brag about how busy we are, but complain about how stressed out we are, it's the same thing as bragging that we smoke 2 packs of cigarette a day, but then complaining that we have lung cancer. Like it just doesn't add up. And so I would just really encourage, if you're listening to this, make that commitment, decide busyness isn't worth it. I'm done with it. And now let's figure out how to beat it.
Yeah. I love that. Cause it's such an addiction to people love, you know, saying they're busy or, you know, feeling busy. And that's a great analogy. So Garland, where can people find you? Where can we get the book and you know, how can you help us get unbusy?
Yeah. Yeah. So let me give you 2 websites to go to. The first is killbusy.com. So if you listen to this and you're like, man, I'm ready to get unbusy, you can go to killbusy.com. I will give you the book for free if you'll pay for the shipping and handling. Okay. And so, so that's the easiest way to get a hold of getting unbusy. The second one that I would recommend people go to is advanceleadership.live. So in advanceleadership.live, that's my company's website, and we help businesses and entrepreneurs stress less and accomplish more by beating busyness.
Awesome. Well, I'll have the links in the show notes, and you guys should definitely, if you're busy and you don't get this book and you complain about being busy, I mean, I have no sympathy for you. So. Garland, it's been quite a pleasure to have you on, and thank you so much for sharing all your wisdom with us. Super valuable. Thanks so much.
My pleasure, Robbie. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you want more, go to innerconfidence.com and don't forget to subscribe to this podcast for the latest episodes.